Hello. On this podcast, we talk about movies, their faults, their flaws, and their plots. So, expect some spoilers.
You've been warned.
Welcome to Plot Spackle.
Hi, I'm John, and I'm the hands.
I'm Eric, and I'm the head.
I'm Richard, and I'm the heart.
That brings us together?
I guess.
All right. So, we're going to be doing a movie today, and we're going to be filling some plot holes, maybe.
Maybe, I mean. But what are we going to fill the plot holes with, John?
Maybe we should fill them with that witch over there.
I don't think she's really a witch.
She looks like a robot to me.
Ah, well, I'll let God sort them out.
Yeah, just...
Except the robot parts. Robots don't have a God.
Robots have no soul. And that's what we learned when we watched a movie. We went back to the 20s. In the 20s. And we watched Metropolis. The, What's the guy's name?
Giorgio Moroder.
Giorgio Moroder version.
1984.
Which has some great...
Amazing.
Colors and...
Amazing,
and synth wave.
They got a lot of contemporary rock bands, and I think it makes the movie. No matter what people on Twitter say, you know who you are.
Twitter, you don't know what's going on.
But maybe we should move into some fun facts. While
wait. So what's the plot? What is the plot of Metropolis, Eric?
Just jumping the gun over here. Apparently, the plot of Metropolis is socialism. The workers shall rise up.
Is it really socialism?
I don't think so. I don't know. They had a lot of stuff going on.
But what was that stuff? You need to describe this. There are people who haven't seen Metropolis. Even this version, which happens to be free on YouTube, and you could just go watch it right now.
Okay, so Metropolis deals with someone from the upper crust who decides that, you know what? Me being rich just isn't fulfilling. I mean, surprise, surprise. How many times does that plot point come out? I mean, seriously. What lazy writing. But the rich kid decides, I'm going to be one of the workers. Hello, fellow kids. Or fellow chums. And yada, yada, yada. He overthrows the system with the help of a robot girl. No. The girl who looks like a... I don't know. It is very...
The robot girl looks like the actual girl.
Is this a soap opera?
A little bit, yes.
Okay. Rich boy falls in love with the common girl. The common girl's identity gets stolen by an evil robot witch. And I guess she leads people into temptation and they basically ruin their system or their civilization. And everyone hugs at the end.
They shake hands.
Oh, they shake hands.
It's very platonic.
Lots of stuff is going on. There's a lot of symbolism in this. Let's say that. It's German.
All right. And maybe you should not take Eric's word for it and watch it yourselves.
You can watch it on YouTube or you can watch the most current version. I'm sure Richard will talk about that.
Speaking of Richard talking.
I haven't been doing a whole lot of it.
No, you haven't.
Well, I was, stumbling through that plot, much like the robot Maria was stumbling through her dance numbers. I don't know. It made me feel weird.
The real question is, were you expecting the bone flute solo by Death?
Not going to lie, I was always under the assumption that Death either played a golden fiddle or the drums when he joined the Wild Stallions.
Well, now you know. Actually part of Jethro Tull. So, Metropolis. Originally released on the 10th of January, 1927, and had an estimated 5.3 million Reichsmark budget.
What is that in real money?
So in real money, it depends, because the closest thing I've got for it right now is an estimated equivalent of 18 million euro, but that's 18 million 2009 euro, not 2019 or 2020 euro. So it has to do a lot of math that I haven't had time to do yet.
It's a lot of math. And I mean, to be honest, during that time period, it would have been rampant inflation.
No, because
this is post-World War I Germany.
So I guess it really depends on the day how much it was valued.
But actually quite a bit of money for a German production.
You can tell.
It, however, did not earn very much money at all. Its box office returns are estimated at 75,000 Reichsmarks out of its, you know, five something.
People just weren't ready for Dancing Robot Maria.
Well, there's a lot about what happened there, because, I mean, we talk about how it was a long film. Even before its initial, like, release run was done, a bunch of people just started cutting it down. Like,
because they're like, this is too long.
This is too long. They're just going to cut it down.
Director needs to learn how to edit.
And then, like, the technical reception by the world at large was pretty bad. It was widely panned. The New York Times said it was a technical marvel, but had feet of clay. And one of the more entertaining ones, it had a review by Mr. H.G. Wells.
Oh.
He said it was foolish. It was full of foolishness, cliche, platitude, and muddlement about mechanical progress and progress in general. And he thought it was bad that automation creates drudgery rather than relieving it. Wonders who's buying all of these people, all the workers' machines' outputs, if it's not the workers. And found it was derivative of Frankenstein, Rusland's Universal Robots, and his own story, The Sleeper Awakes. He was pretty harsh on it.
I think he just wanted a plug for himself. He's like, you should read my book.
So yes, a lot of people were not impressed with it. The depressing one was, you know who was impressed by it?
Hitler. Was it Hitler?
No.
Oh.
You were very close, though.
Mussolini?
Not Mussolini. Joseph Goebbels.
Ah.
And that's actually one of the big things is, like, later on, Lang really decided he didn't like his own movie, possibly because of the whole Nazi fascination with it.
Hey, remember when I said before it started that this was what made the Nazis? And I was joking.
Well, oh,
John, that was a bet.
It was a
John,
bad joke.
John, people died. Sorry, we derailed you, Richard.
All right, yeah.
So, yeah, the big thing with, like, a lot of it is you have Fritz Lang and Thea von Harbou, his wife, who directed and wrote the film. Von Harbou did join the Nazi party. They got divorced, and Fritz Lang had to flee to America to escape the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there were...
What there poor were... taste, John.
I didn't know. I didn't know the historical significance. I just...
We were waiting for Richard to tell us.
So, yeah, it was a big thing. And so that's one of the big reasons why Lang ended up not liking his own movie. A lot of it got lost there, as we talked about. The one we watched was the 1984 version, which only is 83 minutes long. It kept getting cut down and cut down. Like, originally it was released at 153 minutes. In 1927, the year it was released, it got cut down to 116 minutes. Just there. In the US, they cut it down to 105 to 107 minutes. And then in 1936, it was down to 91. The 83 minutes for the 1984, but it was with a bunch of other scenes that were restored that we hadn't seen for a while. In 2001, they actually found a pretty big chunk that they hadn't seen before. Took us back to 124 minutes. And then 2008, they found an almost complete version in Venezuela, which was like a 16mm negative of the film that was able to get us to the 148 minutes that we have now.
So it's kind of like the reverse Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Or reverse George Lucasing. Instead of
adding things in, you keep cutting them out.
But then there's always those weird people who are obsessed with the theatrical releases. So anyways.
Any more fun trivia before we talk about plot holes?
So a little bit of trivia about the Giorgio Moroder version, because like it also received generally poor reviews because, you know, people accused him of ruining the original film. And he's like, well, I didn't touch the original because there is no original anymore. And He was nominated for Worst Original Score and Worst Original Song.
Which one?
The Love Kills was the Worst Original Song and Worst Musical Score for him. Which, I mean, he did do a bunch of other, like, he did the soundtrack for Scarface and a bunch of other 80s films. So he was fairly big, but...
Then he got roasted.
Then he got roasted for Metropolis.
Like Maria the Robot.
Too soon, John.
The robot suit is actually a replica of it, is on display at the Robot Hall of Fame in Carnegie, Pennsylvania. Speaking of robots.
I think that's pretty interesting. I mean, we'll probably talk about this in the later section, but it's obviously influenced a lot of different, like, genres and characters. But we should probably hop into plot holes if you don't have anything more, Richard.
That's pretty much it.
All right, so our plot holes come from our own heads because we couldn't find a list online, really. I think Eric found...
I found a nitpick on IMDb, so...
Yeah, I was looking around too. Couldn't find much. I think it's mostly because, well, I mean, the plot happens. And we do have skips and stuff, but that's because that's the lost footage. But let's hear this nitpick first.
This is on IMDb, and this person is saying that although this story takes place in some distant future millennium, they still rely on steam power. Transportation never evolves beyond 1920s automobiles and biplanes. Clocks and meters are still dial-faced. It's basically he's going through, or I assume it's a he, the person is going through.
What's their name for the guy who nitpicks?
George.
George.
Yeah, it's George just goes through and it's like, if this is set in the far off future, why does everything look like it's from the 20s?
Because fashion is cyclical.
It's almost like it's hard to predict the future, actually.
Well, I was thinking about this. So obviously they're talking about clocks having still having faces, not,
and they still do.
Yeah, they still do.
And we are only 6 years from the date given to us.
But they had advanced to only having to deal with 10 hours in a day.
That was my plot hole we were going to get to.
Well, we'll talk about
it. I'm just saying that your plot hole solves this plot hole.
All right.
Well, what I was going to say is obviously they're talking about the future, but you can't really invent too much of the future. The microchip won't even be invented, or the vacuum tube that predates the microchip won't even be invented for another 20 years. So they can't have LCD or LED screens like with the flashing numbers that we're used to, or like on your VCR or on your microwave or whatever. The technology for that literally can't be replicated in that past. So,
well, I mean, there's speculative technology though. We watch Star Trek and they're like, well, this could be what the future is like.
But it's,
and there's less of that here. But at the same time, it is very kind of anti-progress.
I think the movie focuses more on just showing the haves and the have-nots, like the well-to-do, the upper-class citizens. They have all the luxuries, whereas the workers don't have any of that. So they're not going to show, oh, look at this fancy watch that the haves have. I bet the worker would love one of those. And they have to tell it in a completely silent medium. They can't have a subtitle that says, look at that fancy watch. Because that wouldn't provide anything for the story. Like,
well, it could, but it'd be very unsubtle.
It would seem more like product placement than actually storytelling.
Like, you can go buy this watch now. Check out your Macy's magazine. Check out
my sweet Rolex. You too can have one for only 64 million Reichsmarks.
Check in your Sears catalog. I don't think they had Sears.
They'd have the Sears catalogs. No, I don't know, maybe not Germans in Germany.
Americans would, but... I guess it was released in America in this, so they'll do it in the dub version. Anyways.
If you think about it, in a silent movie, the dubs and the subs are the same thing.
But yeah, so that's just my problem with that plot hole. I don't think the extreme technology of the future needed to be told in that setting. They just had to show rich people have this, the workers have that.
Yeah, and that there are these massive machines that do things that make the city run.
And they also had to explain it like in a way that the people of the day 100 years ago in 1927 would understand. Like, I'm sure having a digital clock screen would be fairly understandable, but people recognize a clock face, and that's what the story needs to tell. Anyways, just that's enough rambling for me, but...
All right, so now we're going to get to my plot hole that I thought of pretty early on. Richard alluded to it, but we do see a clock face. But if you count, there are only 10 hours. However, above that clock is another clock, and that clock is a 24-hour clock.
So I just figure it's the shift clock. You have the 24-hour clock that'll tell you how long it is, what time it is during a day, and then the shift clock that just goes, has it been 10 hours yet, slave? Get back to work. I mean, wage laborer, my bad.
So
indentured servant or
so I was wondering intern. About that, because then does it mean that you have 10 hours on, then 10 hours off? Yes. So your shift is constantly like...
And so they don't go crazy.
Yeah. And you just keep getting... Your sleep schedule has to just keep adjusting. That way you don't... You're too tired dealing with all of this to properly have a revolution.
Say, I just thought maybe they switched to metric time.
No.
This was a German movie. The French are the ones who are crazy about metric.
Also, as far as I'm aware, we don't actually have a metric time yet.
No, we do. The French tried to implement it.
What we will have a French time. We will have a metric time in 6 years. We still have
French.
We still have 6 years until
bringing it back to Orson Welles. Sorry, Richard.
Like, just railed. Yeah, I was trying to keep it going because I'm like, I don't think everyone listening actually knows that.
We'll
put a link in the show notes.
Yeah.
All right.
I
say we still have 6 years until we hit the Metropolis timeline anyways. So who knows what can happen between now and then.
Apparently Art Deco needs to come back.
Let's see. Other plot holes, questions people have.
I think it's a pretty tight movie. Like,
so what's the point? What is really the message of this movie?
That progress needs to have, or you can't have just mindless progress for... Just because.
Simple. The mediator between the head and the hands must be the heart. It's the final line in the entire film, guys.
I don't know.
What does that even mean?
See, I'm thinking about why it was popular with fascism. And I think one of the reasons is this movie says that you need to have classes. And that there are the brains and then the hands. And the hands have to work. And they're not smart enough to do anything else on their own. Because they need the brains to tell them what to do. Because otherwise they rise up and destroy the machine that apparently its whole purpose is to keep them from being flooded.
I don't know that it's its entire purpose, but it's certainly what it did.
I think it's there to just keep the laborers busy. We talked about that when we were watching the movie. That
oh, yeah, there's the one thing where the
workout machine.
The guy's got to keep moving the hands, I guess, to point to the right number. But he's got a light that tells him what to do.
Yeah, so that its entire purpose is to have him be busy. It is basically the middle management of the society.
Think about that. That's really the most future predicting part of this entire film.
Middle management exists.
And the fact that, no. Think about, they have managed to purely roboticize middle management. They just have a machine do it. They don't even have to have a person.
And let's bring in the robot or the... What element does that did that have for the movie? Like, the robot did not have any inhibitions that a normal person would have. In fact, its entire job was to gum up the works. It thought its entire job. I don't know.
Like, that's a weird thing because the robot was made for the purpose of
controlling the workers.
Controlling the workers, but then it escaped the control of its creator and just wanted to party and then break machines and then party some more.
Well, see, it was like, oh, so you want me to like make it so that the working class isn't a problem for you anymore? I can do that.
Ah, so it had adaptive intelligence.
And so it just was like, cool, if I just have the middle, if I have the lower working class destroy themselves, it'll be fine. Back to party.
It did the HAL 1000.
It just looks and realizes that all that machinery was just busy work.
Yeah. And then it went back to partying.
I guess you could just probably say it was probably a metaphor.
That movie was very metaphorical.
You mean a German expressionist science fiction drama?
Yeah, it's a metaphor.
All right. Did you have any questions like about the plot? You say it's pretty tight, mostly because it's old and there's not many twists.
I think you fill in a lot of what the actual plot is because there is no dialogue. Well, there's dialogue, like written dialogue, but that's few and far between. So your brain just fills in, like, why are they going to the next scene? Oh, it's probably this.
So here's a question. How did Maria get all those orphans and up to the pleasure gardens early on in the film? Shouldn't there be, like, security guards to stop that sort of thing?
She used that spiral staircase in the catacombs.
But wouldn't the kids have known about that later when they need to escape the flooding city?
It's probably
maybe the catacombs were flooded.
I think Maria brought all the kids up there just as a worker incentive. If you work hard enough, you can join the likes of these people. But truth is, they're going to die before they earn enough Metropolis points or whatever to join in the pleasure gardens. So it is a red herring.
Metropolis points.
Well, I don't know what type of money they use.
I don't think they have money because it's not like they get paid.
I mean, they're still living.
Well, yeah, they eat food, but I think you just kind of, where you belong, you can just go.
I don't know. All we know is it was ruined but at the end.
And they had to rebuild.
Thanks, Mecha Maria.
Mecha Maria.
Technically, she's not a mech because she doesn't have someone piloting her on the inside, but...
Technicalities. Robo Maria?
But Mecha Maria just has such better alliteration. Anyways, besides the point.
So, now, as for things that it influenced...
Oh, boy.
I think that was all over the place. I mean, the C-3PO?
That is a confirmed case of influence. It was one of the first science fiction movies, wasn't it?
Well, as far as, like, a form of science fiction, because Frankenstein is a science fiction story.
And that's what H.G. Wells talked about. Like, oh, he just cribbed Frankenstein.
And other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably isn't the first science fiction movie. It was one of the first science fiction movie flops, though.
A tradition that continues to be followed today.
I mean, we referenced The Fifth Element while watching it.
We have Queen used a lot of imagery from Metropolis and Radio Gaga. Madonna used a bunch of stuff for Express Yourself. And specifically noted and paid homage to the film and Fritz Lang at the end of it. Let's see. Lady Gaga has done a bunch of stuff for Alejandro, Born This Way, and Applause.
So it has a bit more of a cult following now than it used to.
Yes.
I think a lot of... So I'm reading an article on MTV.com, so take that with a grain of salt, but... One of the big things that Metropolis influenced was the introduction of futuristic cities, like Blade Runner, for example, Tim Burton's Batman movies. A lot of those were influenced by Metropolis.
By the concept of the super city?
Well, Tim Burton's would have been the Art Deco style city, but Blade Runner is just a futuristic city.
I mean, they did create a wholly invented city there.
As an entertaining note... Metropolis was inspired, like the city was inspired when Fritz Lang was offshore of New York at night.
He's like, this is a glittering city. Imagine the people working beneath, toiling on machines, serving the machines, being fed to the machine. So would you watch it again?
I might try and watch the original 2.5 hour one if I'm feeling especially self-loathing.
Like, what are you going to do to just get that sound? To have some sort of background noise. Oh, look, there's a whole list, apparently. Where's this list, Richard?
So, if you go to the Metropolis IMDb page, there were a ton of scores that have been made for Metropolis, because it was originally a silent film. 1975, the BBC did an electronic score. 1984 was Giorgio Moroder's. 1991, Clubfoot Orchestra did a score. 1994, an experimental rock musician, Rambo Amadeus, wrote his own version of the score.
I think he was experimenting mostly with his name.
Certainly.
Rambo Amadeus. It's a D&D character. That's my next the bard.
The Young Composers Collective scored one for people in 1996. Jeff Mills did a techno score in 2000. Abel Kurninski did a score for Metropolis played by like a 90-piece orchestra, a choir of 60, and a couple of soloists. There's tons of soundtracks.
For the 2.5 hour one, do we have one from post 2008?
There are several that have been done.
This is for Eric.
So
write these down.
It's on the internet. Why do I have to write them down?
The Alloy Orchestra has scored 4 different versions, including Giorgio Moroder's and the 2010. They've done their, like, they've done, here's a new score for both of them.
All right.
Dieter Möbius did one in 2012. It was completed and released in 2016 as Music for Metropolis. There, I think the most recent one was actually last year in 2019. Organist Nils Hendrik Aschheim composed and performed live an organ score for the 2010 restoration.
He did it live. So
he performed.
There was an event. There was an event where people came and they paid money to watch a guy play on the organ while Metropolis was playing in the background.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, John, in Utah we used to have there's a place called the Organ Loft. Have you guys heard of that, about that place?
Mm-hmm. I haven't.
So basically you would go and watch, I think it was in, not Park City, Midvale, or Murray, that's it. I think it was in Murray, but you would go watch old movies while someone played on an old organ. I don't think it's operating anymore, though. If it is, that sounds like fun, but yeah, people pay to do that, bunch of hipsters.
I mean, so the real release for you, Eric, I have one for you.
Is it ska? Please say it's ska.
No.
Oh. All right, I'm starting my own version.
So, in 2014, there was the Spanish band, Kasparovec Trio, did a score for Metropolis, which was then released on Record Store Day. For Record Store Day on 2017.
Oh, I bet that record's expensive now.
Maybe. But there is a Record Store Day release of a Metropolis soundtrack for you.
That's your hipster sound right there.
I was going to say my hipster heart just...
So you can find that one and turn on your vinyl while you will put on the silent movie.
Your hipster heart needs to join your hipster hands and hipster head to get this going.
The hipster hands to turn the record and the hipster head to be willing to watch the 2.5 hour version.
All right. So we've talked about... just a lot of stuff. So here was one thought I had. If you were to recast Metropolis today, who would be in what role?
I would choose the Futurama crew. Just retell Metropolis with Futurama characters.
All right, so that means that...
it'd be a cartoon,
Zoidberg, obviously. Zoidberg is Rotwang?
I'd almost want to put Zoidberg as the father.
No, because, well, obviously it's going to be...
Oh, no, the professor's...
The professor's...
No, he's got to be Rotwang.
The professor's Rotwang.
Because he does the crazy robot.
Yeah, but, I mean, Zoidberg's the kind of creepy guy, so who's Zoidberg?
Maybe he's the guy with
Zoidberg
the wrench.
Zoidberg's Jehoshaphat.
All right. No, the guy with the wrench is...
Conrad?
Conrad. Because he keeps the workers in line. Obviously, Bender is the robot.
I don't know.
So totally when he gets the Leela is Maria. Mm-hmm. And so when he gets Leela-fied or turned into Maria, it's literally just like lipstick and then like a single like cardboard eye and everyone gets confused.
Or he just takes out one of his eyes and like, there we go.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously Fry would be the main character.
Yeah, Fry would be Fredder.
I could see them doing that.
Wait, so then Who's Fry's dad then?
Probably just some no-name character that they just bring in because... Oh, no. Zap Brannigan.
No, because I think Zap Brannigan has to be like an introduced character who's like the head of the watch or whatever.
No, I
think... Or like the assistant for Frederson.
No.
The one that he tells to watch his son. And just kind of doesn't do much.
Sorry, I disagree with you, John. He is totally the dad because in the movie, the dad says, I want the robot to impersonate that girl. So, GIF, I want the robot to impersonate that girl.
Oh, that is... Well, that is 100%. Yeah, no, you've convinced me. So, Eric, you're for the Futurama version of Metropolis.
Yeah.
I mean, Futurama's pretty dead now, but...
Most definitely is, but...
if they were going to do another movie, that's what you should do.
No, if they ever decide, hey, let's bring it back, I'll write in and be like, dear sirs or madams, whatever.
Your thoughts, Richard? I think you were trying to do research real quick.
I was. I was trying to figure out who I would get to play Maria.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to go for Kate Blanchett. She's got the eyes.
She does have the eyes.
She can do the eyes. And I think when you watch Metropolis, like Eric can attest to it, the eyes are the thing you need to cast if you're casting Maria.
Because she's all about the eyes. But then also this was that time period where you had to act with your eyes.
You did.
With a silent film.
But I'm like, but that's the thing is I think Kate Blanchett has the, like, she has enough stage presence she can do it. And she has really piercing eyes.
And I think she could do the two versions of the nice Maria and then the robot Maria.
Yeah. And because I know you had somebody in mind for...
Yeah, I can't think of his name.
Let me pull up.
It'd be actually be a reversal, though, because I didn't check, but I assume that the actor for Fredder was, like, really old compared to the age of Maria.
Bill Skarsgård.
Yeah, Bill Skarsgård could be Fredder. Like, they kind of got that same look. I mean, he's not even... Bill Skarsgård isn't even wearing thick white makeup like the guy was in Metropolis.
Just need to put some black lipstick on him?
Yeah. Now, who's our Rotwang?
I mean, he's a bit old now, but I'm like... Christopher Brown. Or Christopher Lee. Not Christopher Lee.
That's going to be hard.
Christopher Lee would have been great for the dad if he... Yeah, wasn't gone, but... Yeah, that's who I was thinking too.
Christopher Lloyd.
Christopher Lloyd. Yeah, he's getting a little old for that though.
But it's not like the dad did a lot. I mean, he was only in...
No, this is for Dr. Rotwang.
Oh, okay. I thought you were still on the dad for some reason.
Yeah, a younger Christopher Lloyd would have been great for it. Like if they had redone this during 1984.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. For modern one though, that's the hard one.
Nicolas Cage.
As everyone.
I'd cast Nicolas Cage as...
I actually kind of like thrown by Eric because, I mean, we talked about how Kate Blanchett has those eyes, but Nick Cage can do the crazy eyes. So we could see the Nick Cage...
Plays everyone.
...version Metropolis. Of Metropolis.
The real problem is that no one's willing to pay him for that.
Yeah, that's... If you have money, which get Kickstarter.
A Nick Cage Kickstarter. Nick Cage or a Metropolis by Nick Cage. I don't know. We'll figure it out. We should get a Kickstarter. Maybe send him a tweet or something.
Nick Cage does Metropolis.
Yeah, like, yeah.
We just want you to recreate every role in Metropolis.
Like, how much does it cost? You know more about this. We're just trying to set this up. We think you can handle it.
How much money would it take?
$0. Oh, cool, I guess.
It's decisions like that are why he has to make all these movies. All right, so any other thoughts on Metropolis?
I think it is a movie everyone should watch at least once, since it is just so influential to everything. Not everything, but just a lot. It influenced a lot of movies.
And then you can say you watched a really old movie.
Like some sort of weirdo.
Yeah.
Did I mention, guys, I've seen Citizen Kane?
He's been talking about this, and like he keeps bringing it up.
But I totally did. It was boring. But I sat through it.
But yeah. So thanks for listening. Go out and watch about robots impersonating women to tear down the system.
I guess I almost want to say the first rule or the first use of...
The first use of Rule 34.
But that's probably going to... I'm going to probably cut that because that's not family appropriate.
Well, that scene wasn't really either.
No, it was not.
Oh, that should be your warning there. Warning, Maria parties hard when she's a robot.
I'd go Richard Grant for Fredder's dad.
All right. Oh, okay. Yeah.
But...
So you should like us on Facebook, whether or not you like the movie.
Let us know if you've seen the movie, even. Be one of those people.
Leave a comment. Did you enjoy Metropolis? Who do you think Futurama should be the appropriate redo of it? Or should we have the Nick Cage does Metropolis?
Or, if you have composed your own score for Metropolis, you can send us a PDF of that to our email, plotspacklepodcast@gmail.com.
You could also let us know on Twitter at plotspacklepod in 280 characters or less who you would like to be in the Metropolis remake. Because let's face it, guys, it's coming.
Yeah, I mean, it's Hollywood. It's what they do. I mean, we're going to have to remake this podcast, like, specific episode in, like, 5 years anyways, right?
Oh, that's true. Also, we would like to give a big thank you to our patrons.
Yes, you are the laborers who keep the machine running.
Oh, I was going to call them they were the upper class, no, but...
You guys are the heads, and we are the hands. And Patreon is the heart that brings us together.
Or... If you could leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from, it really helps us get the word out so that other people can hear it and let people know that there are plot holes in things that can be spackled easily.
I mean, just none of these people are going to know about our whole conversation about the pizza riots. None of you know. That's what Maria was saying.
I guess
people when she's down in the cathedrals.
Except, John, now they all know because you told them about it.
She was all like, get your pizzas and you got to eat your pizza and drink milk, too. And then they're like, what's milk?
Like, holy crap.
And she's like, and they're like, what's pizza? And she's like, oh, I got to start at the bottom here.
Is that what we're really writing about? Eating pizza?
Obviously.
All right.
It's good enough for me.